You're listening to Missing Persons, brought to you by Abject Entertainment. Be sure to check out some of the other great true crime podcasts from this network, including The Murder in My Family,
DNA ID, Zodiac Speaking,
Scene of the Crime,
Beyond Bizarre True Crime,
Citizen Detective,
and
Campus Killings.
All of these podcasts are available for you to binge on right now, wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe where you're listening to this podcast so you don't miss an episode.
The views and opinions expressed by guests on this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the podcast, its creators, or sponsors. If you would like to discuss a missing persons case on this podcast, please be sure to visit missingpersonspodcast.net. This episode may contain unsettling or disturbing subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Missing Persons, a podcast dedicated to spreading the word about people who have vanished under mysterious or unexplained circumstances and the family members who are looking for answers. I'm Jess Betancourt.
And I'm Mike Morford. Together, we created this podcast to help give a voice to people who continue to search for their missing loved ones, in some cases, even after decades have gone by. In each episode, you'll hear from Jess giving listeners the backstory and the basic facts of the disappearance.
Then Mike will speak with someone who's intimately connected to the missing person, and his guest will share their story with us.
Please stay tuned at the conclusion of this episode to hear about our Patreon program and our commitment to help find people who have gone missing. We'll also share with you where you can find more information and how you can join our team and help our efforts. You'll get recommendations for other podcasts we think you'll enjoy and more.
So sit back and enjoy this episode, and who knows, maybe you can help us find someone who's missing. Toby Anderson is a missing 16-year-old boy who was last known to be in Selma, Oregon, in November 1986. Toby was born on December 18, 1969, in Bell, Texas. He was the oldest of three children. His siblings were Marcy and Randy. Everyone recalls Toby as being a sweet-natured, quiet boy who was a normal, fun-loving kid when people got to know him. Toby's family moved to Fortuna, California, where his father was from. His parents divorced, and Toby and his stepfather, his mother's new husband, clashed. Toby got in trouble and was sent at age 11 or 12 to live in a juvenile facility in California. He spent approximately 2 years there and was released into the care of an uncle, his mother's brother, Randy. Randy took Toby to Selma, Oregon, to live with the family of Toby's father's brother, his uncle, Almer Willis Wright, who went by Billy. Wright had his own family, including a wife and juvenile daughters. Toby was to live with the Wrights and help out around their five-acre property when he wasn't at school. Toby was enrolled in the local high school, Illinois Valley High, starting in February 1986. He was also enrolled there the following fall, until November. At that time, his uncle Billy Wright informed the school that Toby had gone back to California to live with his father. But that was not true. It took a while before Toby's family realized that he was missing. It's unclear exactly what Billy Wright told Toby's father at the time about Billy's whereabouts, but it is believed that he said that Toby ran away. The police categorized Toby as a runaway and told Toby's father that he would turn up eventually. In 1987, Toby's father traveled the country looking for his son, going from relative to relative throughout Missouri, Arkansas, and Oregon. No one had heard from Toby. Toby's dad eventually passed away, and for a time, no one was looking for his son. Our guest today, Denise McGarity, is Toby's first cousin. Her mother and Toby's father are siblings. The family was not close, as Toby lived in California while Denise and her family lived in St. Louis. But Denise, who was 11 at the time, remembers Toby's dad, her uncle, coming to stay with them and saying he was looking for Toby. As an adult, Denise reconnected with her cousin Marcy, Toby's sister. She learned that the family had never located Toby. In 2018, she started looking for her missing cousin, assuming he was out there somewhere after running away as a teen. She tried to report him missing in California, but had too little information. After a few years of searching, she realized that Toby had not actually been seen by anyone since his stay at his uncle Billy Wright's in Selma, Oregon. Neither she nor anyone in law enforcement has been able to find any indication that Toby was alive after the fall of 1986. And one of Billy Wright's children told Denise that she believed her father had killed Toby. Let's talk about Billy Wright. Just months after Toby vanished, Wright moved his family to Arkansas to be near his mother, whom he claimed was ill. In the late 1990s, Wright was arrested where he was living in Arkansas for child rape and child sexual abuse. This from the court record from Wright's failed appeals. Quote, "The record shows that appellant is 52 years old and that the crimes were committed shortly after he had married the victim's grandmother. The children called him Pawpaw or Grandpa Bill. He was charged with raping J.I., a 2-year-old girl. Appellant was also charged with raping N.W., a 4-year-old girl." End quote. These children were kids that Wright had access to through his new marriage. After a trial, Wright was found guilty of first-degree sexual abuse and 2 counts of child rape. He was sentenced to 30 years imprisonment. He appealed, and his conviction was affirmed by the Court of Appeals on December 19, 2001. Billy Wright is suspected by certain family members, including Denise, of having more child sexual abuse victims. When Denise learned about Billy Wright's horrific criminal history of child rape and that he was still in prison, she wrote to him asking for information about what had happened to her cousin Toby. He actually answered her letters and made all sorts of excuses for what had happened to Toby. We aren't going to get into the lies this man told about Toby, but he attempted to shift the blame onto the teenager for molesting Wright's daughters. He told Denise that after he found that out, he dropped Toby off at either the police station or juvenile facility in or near Cave Junction, Oregon. He claimed not to be able to remember which one. However, neither agency has any record of Toby, and police have told Denise that had Toby been dropped off at the police station or juvenile hall as Wright claimed, a report would have been filed and Toby's parents would have been contacted. In an even more disturbing letter, Wright suggested that Toby might be dead, and if he died, it was from a blow to the head. He also hinted that Toby was buried in a hill. His letters all told different, vague stories about the fate of Toby Anderson, none of which can be verified. Denise discovered that the rental home Wright and his family were living in Selma, where Toby was staying, includes a large hill behind the house on the property. She has worked with the Oregon State Police to try to arrange for a search of this property. Denise gathered the funds to pay for a cadaver dog search and got it greenlighted by law enforcement, but the current landowners refused to permit the search to proceed. They retained attorneys to prevent Denise from contacting them. At this time, Denise is pushing the Oregon State Police to obtain a search warrant to mandate a search of the property. But this is an uphill battle absent tangible evidence of Toby being there. She plans to travel to attend the September 11, 2023 parole hearing for Billy Wright to speak out against his release. When Toby Anderson was last seen, he was 16 years old and he had brown hair and green eyes. He was about 5'6" tall and weighed about 160 pounds. His case has been entered into NamUs and DNA from his siblings has been submitted to law enforcement. Mike Morford sat down to talk with Denise McGarity, Toby Anderson's cousin, about that case. That conversation is coming up after a word from our sponsors.
Hi, Denise, and welcome to Missing Persons. I'm happy to have you on here to discuss your cousin Toby's case with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to have you, and we're going to try and help you spread the word that your cousin is still missing. He's been missing since 1986, so we're coming up on, what is that, almost 40 years. I'm curious, how has your cousin's disappearance affected your family over that past 3.5 decades?
Our family was somewhat distant before Toby went missing. My mom and Toby's dad are biological brother and sister. They have several half brothers and sisters. With my mom being blind, we lived in the St. Louis area. we would only talk to them on the phone. We never got to go out and see them until Toby went missing. His dad came to visit us. Since Toby has went missing, quite a few years had went past before I got involved and started to search for him. Since then, we have been some distant, some have gotten closer. So it's a divided with family right now. I have made some enemies with my family, and I'm okay with that. But, you know, the truth needs to be told.
I know we'll get into some of the things that are pretty disturbing, you know, that point maybe in the direction of a family member being responsible. We'll dive into that. But I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit of background about Toby himself. He was only 16 when he went missing. What can you tell us about him and what he was like and what was going on in his life leading up to when he went missing?
Sure. So Toby was born in Bell, Texas. He was the oldest of three children. They moved to California, where his dad is from, around Redding, Fortuna area. His mom and dad did get a divorce, and his mom remarried. From family members explaining the situation, there might have been some problems with his stepfather and Toby, which caused him to go at the age of 11 to 12 into juvenile hall. He stayed there roughly about 2 years, according to documents that we have. Everybody I've spoken to said Toby was such a sweet, kind-hearted kid. He would joke around, not really open and outgoing, but when somebody would address him, he would just act like a normal person. I have spoken recently to a high school classmates who said he was absolutely wonderful. He was just kind of distant, but once you got him to talk, he was just like every other kid. You know, he smoked. He probably partied with kids. They never said he did, but I assume, you know, being a teenager myself, you do have that in you. After the first 2 years of juvenile, Toby did some things wrong, which by standards today wouldn't be that bad. I know he did take his dad's car on a joyride, got in trouble, got put back into juvenile for another year when he was released. So as far as between the ages of 11 and 16, Toby did not really have a joyful life outside of juvenile hall.
So he had a little bit of a rough path, you know, with his, you know, parents breaking up and then him sort of bouncing around to the juvenile hall. He came out, got into high school, and he wound up living with his uncle, Elmer Billy Wright. How did that come to be? How did he wind up living with him, and how long was he there?
Okay, so what I was able to find out from family members is Toby's uncle on his mom's side, so his mom's brother, somehow got, I guess, I don't know if it was custody or how the court system would just let him go to his uncle Randy out of juvenile hall. That uncle Randy knew our uncle, Uncle Billy, and Randy, and I confirm this, is the one who took Toby to our Uncle Billy in Selma, Oregon, from what I understand, to help him out around their property.
And do you know how long he was living there, and how was he doing there while he was there?
Yes. So I was able to determine the dates of February of 1986. And after speaking to the school, the last date was at the beginning of November of 1986.
So he did not live there very long. He did attend school, but he did not live there very long.
Okay, so we're talking less than a year, maybe half a year or something like that, or three quarters of a year?
Correct.
Yeah, and that was one thing you mentioned. He was there, you mentioned November of 86, because I've seen some different estimates of when he went missing. You know, I've seen, I think, August, and then some that said September, October, but you're saying the school had, you know, a record of him being there until November. Is that correct?
Yes. So when I reported him first missing, which was 5-6 years ago, I honestly thought he was alive. That's what started my research. When I reported him missing, the Josephine County, we needed a date. And honestly, we couldn't figure out when he exactly went missing until we started digging into photos. And so we kind of rounded it out a date just to get it in the system so we could start having the police involved with the situation. So there was some dates of August 1988. I'm not sure where that exactly came from, because some of the dates were, I guess, mixed up within people putting out flyers. But I was able to confirm after I reported him missing by the school. I had to go through a lot of legal battles with that. They won't give me the exact date was his last day in school, but they did give it to the police. But they did tell me it was the beginning of November 1986. And they confirmed that our uncle signed him out. And in that statement of him signing him out, said that he was moving back with his father.
And I think it's important just to back up real quick for listeners. So you are the one that reported him missing, and this was years later. What year was this again you reported him missing?
It's been 5 years since I reported him missing.
Okay, so like 2018. A couple of things. So first of all, why had he never been reported missing as far as you know? And then second of all, what made you get interested in his case to sort of pick up his cause and figure out what happened to him?
Okay. So with the first question, the reason why is when he went missing, the police kind of declared him as a runaway and that he'll just come home. So I know for a fact his dad traveled across to where we live in St. Louis area, looking for Toby. So he went to any family member, Arkansas, Illinois, St. Louis, all across, all the way from California, looking for Toby right after Toby went missing in 1987. I know they would not report him missing. The police thought, you know, hey, he's a juvenile, you know, troublemaker, he'll come back home. He probably just ran away. He'll eventually come back home. So fast forward to 2018-19. Marcy, Toby's sister, and I kind of reconnected. And we got to talking about her dad and my mom and their life situation. And I had asked her, you know, did they ever find Toby? And it kind of got her emotional. She cried and she said, no, we've never heard from him again. We've heard all of these stories that he joined a circus, or, you know, he was killed in a car accident is one of the stories we've heard. Or he just plain ran away and didn't want anything to do with the family. So
for the first 3 years of my search, I really honestly thought he was alive. I mean, I was searching for a person that was alive.
Wow. It's fascinating that someone can go missing and it never really be reported officially for so many years until you took that initiative to sort of get the ball rolling. And obviously when you're doing it years later like that, the police are sort of starting behind the eight ball because they've got to go back in time and try and find witnesses and documents and records and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming it wasn't an easy task for them to go back and sort of, do that.
No, it wasn't. And I can tell you, I struggled to report him missing at first. Before I found out he was in Selma, Oregon, I actually attempted to report him in Mendocino County and Humboldt County, California, because those are the last counties of his juvenile records. I could not get an officer to listen to me. I could not, not at all. I would get very upset with them and tell them that they need to do their jobs. You know, in my career, if I didn't do my job, I'd be fired. I don't understand why, a 16-year-old who was in juvenile system and who should have been on probation and should have been verified. I really do blame the California system that dropped the ball, and they would not report him missing. They would not. It took me to make a family page of bringing Toby home and putting it in there before I found out he was in Oregon. I had no idea he was actually with our own uncle.
And were you able to find this out because someone came forward with tips that helped you learn more information?
Yes. So I did hire a private investigator to help me get some of the word out, because I had searched every prison, not only in the United States, I'm talking about Canada, Mexico, Ireland, England. I mean, I went any prison that I could find that I could fax a copy of his photo and a missing person's photo, I sent it. I called every mental hospital there was, every hospital. I contacted every circus that I can think of, not only in the United States, but Canada, England. I went international with my search, thinking, okay, well, maybe he did run away. And I stalked some Toby Eugene Andersons, and they weren't him, but, I needed to be sure, that I really honestly just thought he was alive. But when I got the tip, it was from another family member, and I do protect them in certain extent. Not all of them anymore, just because of some things that have recently come to surface. But there are some of them I do protect, but this person came forward and told me that he was living with them. And she believed her dad killed him. So.
Well, and that is the Uncle Billy.
That is our Uncle Billy. Yes.
Okay. So you start sort of looking with this new direction to go in, and then you find out that this Uncle Billy has some pretty troubling stuff in his past. Can you tell us a little bit about his past? And I think it's pretty clear that you came to suspect him yourself, but can you explain some of that?
Yeah. So once I found out, I knew about what Uncle Billy is sitting in prison for. I remember some things that's happened in the state that he is convicted in that my dad, before he passed, had questioned Billy's behavior. But Billy is a known child rapist, and I do not call him a child abuser or anything. He is clearly a child rapist. I know more that he's done that I do protect and don't throw that out in public, but I know he has more victims out there that has not come forward. At least not, they won't come out in public. I have gotten at least 4 to 5 individuals that have came forward telling me that my uncle had molested them, which is really hard, but he is a known child rapist. And this has been in his past, it has been probably gone on quite a long time.
And this is all stuff that he actually wound up going to prison for, correct?
Correct. He actually went to prison for raping 3 minor children under the age of 10.
Okay. And how much time did he serve? Is he still in prison?
He is currently in prison. On September 11th of this year, I am actually traveling to go speak at his parole hearing to try to keep him in prison as long as I possibly can, because I need answers. Of course, I know I'm not going to get answers, but I need more time before he gets out. One, I know what's going to happen. He's going to hurt another child. He's going to hurt another child. He writes me letters. I actually had stopped writing him letters because they were so disturbing. I had to face him. I had to question him. And I had to let him know that we know what he did to Toby. Of course, he does state that Toby is the evil one and Toby's the monster. He's not the monster. And those are his words.
So you basically confronted him about the possibility that he had something to do with Toby's disappearance. Did he, you know, he sort of shifted the blame, but did he ever flat out deny being involved with his disappearance?
Yeah. So in his first letter, of course, he attempted to in a conniving way, as best way I can say it, is, oh, don't you remember I've done this for you? And don't you remember I've done that for you? Which he never has. And I had to tell him, you've got the wrong person. But he tried to portray himself in the first letter as the victim. And he stated that he drove. Okay, his exact comment was, Toby raped my daughter, so I put him in the car so I wouldn't kill him. And I drove him back to the juvenile hall or the police station. Those were his exact comments.
Yeah, that sounds like, which is it? Did you drive him to the juvenile hall or to the police station?
Yeah, so that was my next letter is, okay, well, which one did you do? Because if you drove him to Josephine County Police Department, I can tell you that would be on record. I can also tell you that the closest juvenile hall to that location would have been 4 to 5 hours away, and they would not. I've spoken to California's and I've spoken to Oregon's. They would not have accepted a 16-year-old child in the middle of the night and just take him without a court order. You cannot just drop a teenager off and say he's your problem. So the mixed stories that I've gotten from my uncle, that's where we're at right now, where his mixed stories are.
So his stories, I know, have changed a little bit over the years. As far as him dropping off, where he dropped them off, and then obviously he said that he was sending them back to California, and I think you were pretty clear that Toby's dad had no idea that he was coming back to California. That was news to him. So essentially the last person to have any kind of inkling where Toby was his uncle Billy, the same person that signed him out of school the last day he was there. And then after that, Toby sort of just disappears.
Correct. Yeah. He has told us in the past, a story was that Toby just got mad at everybody one day and took off running. That's the story I was told for years. And then whenever I confronted him, his story was, oh, I took him to the police station, dropped him off. The cop come running out and said, what are you doing? And he said, oh, I told him he's your problem now and drove off. That's the last thing I saw of Toby. Next story was, oh, yeah, well, I think I dropped him off at the juvenile hall. Well, which juvenile hall? Well, the closest one. Well, I need to know where, you know. So that was the stories I was getting. Now, when we got confirmation from the school, his story was, Toby's dad came and got him and he's going back to California and going to school. In one of his letters, which he loves the attention. In one of his letters, he put the blame on one of his daughters and said, I think one of my daughters killed him. That was really hard for me. And I, because I protect those girls, even though they hate me, I have protected them through this whole route, but never told them that their dad said that one of the girls could have killed him. And they were younger than I was.
And how old would they have been at the time that Toby disappeared?
One was the same age as Toby. She would have been 16. Then there would one was 15, one was 10, and one was 9. There's two younger ones than I am. And then I was 11 when Toby went missing. And I know there was two the same age as my sisters. So they were older.
So for him to say one of his daughters may have did it, now he's changing his story again because, well, which is it? Did one of the daughters kill him, or did you drive him away like you said you did? So it seems like there's more of a changing story on his part.
There is. I mean, every letter that he has been sent back to me has been something a little different. The only thing he has been consistent on is he is the innocent one. He is a victim. He has done nothing wrong. This is a man who sent me a document from what he's sitting in prison for, the raping of three minor kids. He sent me a document saying, look, my DNA doesn't match. So I sent it back to him and I wrote him a letter and I said, you must be pretty dumb. This just says that you did not give those children a sexually transmitted disease. This is not your DNA. Your DNA matched on those kids. I said, you might want to rethink of how you say things. So I was very ticked off that he sent me that, because those kids are victims. Those kids did not deserve to have that done to them. And that is actually public knowledge of what he has done. That's the hardest part. I still to this day have not read the whole thing.
Hmm. And so, you know, here's this person that's got a changing story, a criminal background, terrible stuff he's done. And there's also a report that he made a threat against someone telling them that they were going to put them in the hill the way where Toby was or something along those lines. Can you talk a bit more about that threat and who that was that Billy threatened?
That was one of Billy's daughters that told me that she believes her dad killed Toby. And I was also told that there was an affair with the mother at one point in time, maybe around the time that Toby went missing, and that if she ever speaks of what was done, that she would end up on the hill
with her mom's boyfriend and Toby. Now, where that hill is, I'm pretty sure it's on that property, but we've kind of had a setback with that.
So I would think a logical place to want to search to see if there's any kind of possibility that's true would be search that property, maybe using cadaver dogs or whatever. First of all, is the property still owned by the family or someone else's now? And is there any possibility of getting permission to search that property?
So no, they rented that property. And I also found 6 miles down the road, and my uncle also rented another property, which I currently believe the reason why he had two properties that he was renting at that time in 1986 is because maybe growing some marijuana or something. There was something illegal going on there with drugs. I just don't know what it is. But I know on one property, there was no house, nothing. The other property, there was a trailer. We've been fighting for years to try to get a search. And I do not blame the detectives that are on it. I don't. But recently we were awarded for the first time to get a search. This is where I get emotional and I'm sorry.
No, take your time.
So we were awarded a search in January and on the terms that I had to pay for it. I did get the money and we got a canine organization to help us. It's not cheap to do these searches, but because it's a cold case, families have to pay for that themselves. February is always a tough month for me in life, period. But I was really excited this year because they told us on February 8th, we were going to get a search. And the canine group was on their way to the airport. When the landowners changed their minds suddenly. The detective had asked me to please contact them and let them know how desperate this is to just have the canine search that property. That's all we want. We don't care how they live. We don't care what they're doing. That had nothing that we had a contract that they could, you know, nothing was going to happen to them. Their property wasn't going to be taken away. Their kids wasn't going to be taken away. We don't care how they live. I didn't care if they lived in a tent. I don't care if they live without a tent and they're living off just out in the open. I don't care. All we cared about is to finally get a search. When I reached out to them, they weren't real pleasant about that. And, you know, I was doing what the detective had asked me. And then they had an attorney call me and threaten me. The attorney told me I wasn't allowed to contact them again because bones will just disappear, you know. So that is the most... that is the most recent. And that's the one who, that's the whole thing that gets me is I think that's the most unfair thing that they could have done is not only deny us a search after 30 some odd years, but to have an attorney threaten. And I took that as a threat on my life because he did state where I lived. So not only did he tell me he knew where I lived, in the same conversation, this attorney has basically stated that bones will just disappear. So I'm not sure if he means that Toby's bones are going to disappear or that was a threat on my life.
And of course, I have since February have been trying to contact an attorney in Oregon to help me get help with this, you know, because right now that's our last hope, is to get this done, you know, just a search. I mean, we even had a gift for that family. I had some extra money saved to give that family, and we were going to not only give them this money as a gratitude for letting us search, but we were going to help them out with whatever they needed. And this is, we kind of got slapped in the face this year.
That'd be a tough, a big letdown.
It was a huge letdown. That could have been the worst timing, because that was the date that Toby, the day we were supposed to search was the day that Toby went to Oregon. And I thought, oh my gosh, we're going to find him after all this time, and he's going to get to go home with his dad, you know, because his dad and mom have both passed away, but he's going to get to go home. And Marcy and Randy, Toby's brother and sister, are going to finally get answers. And the nieces and nephews in the family are finally going to know what the truth is. You know, cousins. But it's been such a letdown this year. This was probably the worst. This is just as bad as him going missing. What happened?
Yeah. And I can't imagine how, you know, you're psyched up and happy to have a chance to at least look to see if Toby's remains are there, and then to just get shut down at the last second. That's awful. I'm curious, can the police step in if they had reason to believe or probable cause? Could they just go on the property and search? Do you know that?
We have to have some kind of evidence. So what we need is one of the girl who one of the daughters who initially stated stuff, they're keeping hush now. And I know it was one of them hates me. She wrote me a really nasty letter, and that's okay. But I can't get any of them to answer. But what I need is some kind of proof that he could be on that property before we can get a search warrant. Will my uncle state it? I don't know. I'm hoping when I go and speak in September that maybe, just maybe,